This is The Takeaway, and I'm Duarte Geraldino. The Texas Civil Rights Project estimates in total about 3,000 veterans have been deported. That's right. I said 3,000 U.S. veterans have been deported. But that's a number no one wants to focus on. The Department of Homeland Security does not officially keep track of the number of U.S. veterans who have been deported. But we now know for sure that that number has grown by at least one. U.S. Army veteran Miguel Perez Montes, a man who served two tours of duty in Afghanistan from 2001 to 2004, was walked across the U.S.-Mexican border because of a felony drug conviction last Friday. We reached out to Miguel in Tijuana, Mexico, where he met up with another deported U.S. veteran, Hector Barajas. Hector runs the Deported Veterans Support House in Tijuana. Veterans who live there in the support house call it the bunker, and that's where Miguel is now staying. Yes, the predicament is so common that there is now a safe house for U.S. veterans deported in Mexico. Also with us is Emma Hilbert. She's a staff attorney with the Texas Civil Rights Project. But we start with Miguel Perez Montes and his story.
The last month has been just chaos. I was at the detention center in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and I was on a 40-day religious fast just so I can, praying to my higher power so I can give me the strength so I can accept the decisions that were coming ahead of me. And people in administration weren't too pleased with that. So I was put in segregation for a while. They cut off my water. They wanted me to knock on the door every time I wanted to get a drink of water. And after I made a couple phone calls and people started calling the detention center and calling ICE, I was transferred down to Kankakee, Illinois, which was a little bit better. And ICE called me for a citizenship interview where we had been talking about maybe doing retroactive citizenship before I committed the felony. But they were aware of the situation, so they called me and they said they were going to look that over. We did the citizenship interview. They did the exam, the test that they do, the citizenship. I passed it with no problems. It was all smiles and everything. I was asked to look at the paper, make sure that my name and everything was spelled correctly, because that was going to be exactly how it's going to appear on the citizenship certificate. You sure it's okay? Yes. Okay. See you at 11. Then it was, we'll see you at noon. And about 2:15 that day, which was the March 15th, I believe, we got the answer around 2:15, and they said, no, you don't qualify for citizenship because of your lack of moral character.
They told you, no, you do not qualify for citizenship, even though you are a U.S. veteran and you served two tours of duty. When you heard that no, what did you think?
I was devastated because I still believe I'm never going to change this. The United States Constitution and the laws are the best ones in the world. But just because they are the best doesn't make them perfect, and they got a few flaws. But it's not so much the Constitution and the written law. I believe it's just the people that interpret the law or have the power to bend it a little bit, and they can go either way. And in my case, they decided to go a different way. So I'm devastated with the people that are behind that. But now with the American citizen or with the people, with the Constitution, with the law, I don't feel wrong by them. No, because that's the reason I went to war. I wasn't drafted. I signed up. I volunteered. I put on the uniform with the flag that said U.S. Army. It didn't say any other country Army, United States Army. And there's something that I'm proud of, because I fought for my children, for my friends, for my family, for my community. I understand that when I came back and I wasn't behaving the right way and committed a mistake, a felony, but I paid for that. And I felt was like, now I'm being charged twice. I paid for this, and now I get a receipt saying, well, you still owe.
Miguel, I want to ask you if you could just describe when they escorted you across the border. Did they drive you across? Did you walk across? Can you just can you paint that picture for me?
I was still in the plane when one of the ICE officers runs up to the plane, goes inside, and he's like, Miguel Perez Montes, And I'm right here. I'm all the way in the back, handcuffed by myself with two other officers watching me the whole flight. That I don't understand. But he's like, "Hey, you're the veteran, right?" And I said, "Yes." He's like, "He's coming with me." And then he's like, "What happened?" He's like, "How come you're not a citizen?" So we just small talk. He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, come on, you're coming with me." He's like, "We need to fix this." So he takes the handcuffs off and he gives me the bag and we're like, "Yeah, we need to correct this." And once we go through this door, like a gate, right through there, he's like, "Go ahead." He closed the door right behind around and he's like, "We're done here. That's it." I said, "What?" He's like, "You see those arrows, those green arrows? That's the Mexican immigration. Go ask them for help. We're done here," and walked away. So I was standing there on the bridge, just staring at the flag, the U.S. side of the border, just brokenhearted. And the first thing that came to my mind, I was like, "This is not happening. This is not happening. This is not happening." And I tried to look for a way out completely. I can talk about it now because that thought is gone, but not the feeling of what happened. My first reaction was like, "I gotta jump off this bridge," but it's fenced in, so you can't really jump out. And I was just stuck with the clothes that they gave me from prison from 2016 that they have been in property this whole time, which is just a pair of prison joggers and a white T-shirt. And my shoes with no shoelaces.
So, Miguel, I want to bring in Emma, staff attorney with the Texas Civil Rights Project. So, Emma, you study these numbers. How common are cases like Miguel's where you have people who have served in the U.S. military that are being deported?
They're a lot more common than we'd like. The estimates we have are that about 3,000 veterans have been deported today. You know, it's hard to kind of get a very accurate figure because immigration services don't necessarily track whether or not a person they're deporting is a veteran or not. But based on stories, you know, like Miguel's, like Hector's, we estimate that number is pretty astounding.
So you mentioned that these numbers are difficult to come by. Why doesn't the federal government want to count these cases?
That's a really good question. I mean, if you think about just the idea of deporting a veteran who served honorably in the U.S., that's frankly the most un-American thing you can do. The other problem that from a legal perspective is that when a veteran is facing deportation, for certain crimes, the immigration judge has no obligation to even consider whether or not that person is a veteran, to even consider, you know, the number of times they're deployed, their honorable service, their ties to their family and the community in the U.S. or their home. So you really don't even get the tracking on that end as people are being deported.
Hector Barajas, I understand this situation has gotten so bad that you are trying to help all of the U.S. veterans who have been deported by creating a safe house of sorts in Mexico.
Yes, we have a deported veteran support house here in Tijuana. Recently opened up another one in Juarez a year ago. We're actually on our one-year anniversary for that one. And we're gearing up. We're already planning a trip to Dominican Republic and Jamaica.
So what are some of the unique needs and risks that U.S. veterans who have been deported face?
Sure. One of the immediate needs are the housing, having a safe place to go and basically having that stability and even just being able to speak that language, English language. And the other one is getting them their IDs, birth certificates, job placement, some of the things that they face is, you know, they could be deported to a country where there's a lot of instability. So it's just, you know, there's that uncertainty of what's next, you know. So it can be a very difficult situation, and you're putting that person on a traumatic experience is just being deported.
In your situation, you were also deported. You served in the U.S. military. Is that right?
Yes, I served from 1995 to 2001. I was an 82nd Airborne Paratrooper, honorably discharged, and I was deported in 2004, snuck back to the country, got caught again, and I finally decided to stay here and start my advocacy a couple of years after, and it's led to the resource centers that we have, and we believe in the motto of leaving no man behind.
So many of these men were defending the U.S. and then were kicked out of the country. How do you help them make sense of that situation?
One of the most important things is not giving up. You know, I didn't give up 14 years ago, but accepting the reality, hey, I'm in Mexico, I got to be a productive citizen, I got to get my IDs, I got to do all these different things, and that helps. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is get these guys, hey, you know, get a job, do this, do that, while you're waiting, you know, and get your VA benefits. You know, there's different things that we need to work on to make sure that they're, you know, that there's some stability. And I think accepting the reality of where you're at, not giving up, is very important.
And you can actually get VA benefits while you're in Mexico, so you can see a doctor or just get payments?
You can get your payments, and then there's a program called the Foreign Medical Program, and you can see doctors for your service-related disabilities, only for service-related disabilities, and the VA will reimburse you for those doctors and medications, but you have to be service-connected.
Now, for a lot of people listening right now, so many hearts are going out to you right now, but there is, in some cases, a silver lining, and I understand that you may actually be coming back to the USA now?
Yes, I have a ceremony to complete the citizenship process on April 13th, Friday at 10 a.m., so looks like my ordeal has finally ended, but not my mission. You know, I decided to stay here for one more year in Tijuana, being able to go back and forth. And eventually I want to have a job and where I can get paid to provide stability for my family that I haven't been able to take care of. But I'll still continue working on this. And I think I can do a lot more from over there than here, but continue to make sure that we take care of our men and women.
So what was the secret? What was the solution for you?
So the biggest hurdle for any deported veteran is the crime. You have to get rid of the crime. And there's various options. Every case is different. Every case has its merits. But in my particular case, I got a full and conditional pardon from the governor of California. So that got rid of the crime. And that's, you know, basically I'm eligible for citizenship. So I'm going home finally.
Well, thank you for your service and welcome back to the USA. Now, Miguel, what about you? What are your next steps?
My immediate next step, it's just cloudy because of the culture shock and the recent events. But I also have to continue fighting and giving it all I can for all the deported veterans and those in detention. But it's like today or tomorrow, I have my mother visiting me from the United States. So I'm just spending a couple of days and just not to think about anything. I haven't been able to hug my mother for 9 years. So this was great to be out and to spend some time with her.
Miguel Perez Montes, a veteran who's recently been deported, Emma Hilbert, staff attorney with the Texas Civil Rights Project, and Hector Barajas, veteran and founder of the Deported Veterans Support House. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
This is The Takeaway.